listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. I'm guessing if you're back again, that means you like the show. So I hope you'll do two things for me. First off, I hope you'll subscribe, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you can find us. Be great if you subscribed, and also if you left us a review. Those two things help us make the show better, also helps us expand the reach to more folks. Up first this week, I've got Mike, producer Mike, on with us. Hey, Mike, thanks for coming on.
Hey, how's it going?
Where are you joining us from today?
I'm home. I'm in Chicago working out of my co-working space, so I'm a happy camper.
That's awesome. I'm home too, although not for long. I've got a crazy Disney thing coming up that the day that we drop this episode, people, if you're listening on the day that we drop this episode, this coming Wednesday, the 29th, you might want to take a peek at Twitter to see Ed doing one of the craziest things he's done in a while. I won't say the craziest thing I've ever done, but definitely one of the craziest things I've done in a while.
Yeah, and I'm not jealous at all. You're going to Orlando and I get to go to Richmond. So how fair is that?
Well, anyway, up for segments this week. I had a lot of fun recording both of the segments that we've got in the episode this week. First, we've got Stefan Krasowski from Rapid Travel Chai. He and I were recording a Now Boarding segment a couple weeks ago, and you know, he made a suggestion to me sort of on the fly. He's like, "Hey, do you want to talk about African safaris?" And it's like, "Well, yeah, I mean, why not?" I had no idea what to expect, and so what ended up coming out of it was my expectation that it costs you $10,000 to, you know, book an African safari, completely off base. And he gave us some great strategies for how to do that for like $100 a day. You're going to love the segment if you have any desire to see animals in the wild, which if you don't, boy, gosh, I don't know why. And then next up, anybody that loves to get a good chuckle out of me getting my butt whooped, Tiffany Funk from 1 Mile at a Time takes apart my wallet. And now, as a guy who gives credit card advice all the time, she's going to sit down and explain why my wallet isn't right and why I have new cards I need to put in there in place of old ones. This was a lot of fun for me because Tiffany and I are great friends. And I will say, this is probably the nicest I've ever been taken behind the woodshed for, you know, for travel decisions. So hope you'll stick around for both of these segments. Before we get to those, Mike and I have a couple of news and notes that we want to cover that, you know, that you should be definitely zoning in on for your travels. And first up is Nationals 1-2 free promo. And you know, Mike and I are both Hertz guys as a general rule. And I think that's the interesting thing here is even though we're both Hertz guys, we both have the same opinion. And I've had this opinion every year this promo comes up. The 1-2 free promo is a pretty darn good promo as far as definitely as far as car rental promos go. Right, Mike?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been loving on the Hertz because I'm trying to max out as many points as I can get for United. But, sure. But I mean, two rentals and you get a free one. How can you go wrong with that?
Yeah, and I love that you brought up to me, which I wrote about, but sort of like forgot top of mind stuff, that there are a bunch of other ways to earn points with a promo, including using the app to book, you know, ordering special add-ons, if you're renting a car internationally. So there are a bunch of ways to max out this promo where you could, in theory, actually get a free rental from one rental. You get enough points if you maxed everything out. Either way, you know, great promo with lots of different options. Do you think, I mean, I know the United promo is great given the number of miles you can earn, especially on shorter rentals. Yep. Do you think that this gets some of your business?
Most definitely, actually, because I'm in the process of reevaluating rental car preferences. So, I was crushing it with Hertz, but then they put in a 2-day minimum. Yeah. And so that's really cramping my style now. and I'm doing a status match with American. So I did an Avis rental. I'm picking up an Avis tomorrow, but I didn't realize that it takes a while for them to do a match. So I'm going to have to like wait in line to actually get a car. Ooh. Yeah. So I'm praying that they'll give me Preferred Plus. I mean, the cool thing with National, and not to like quote the commercial, I mean, the commercials are kind of catchy, you know, no matter who you are, you just walk to the car. And so When it comes to saving time, like the last thing I want to do is be standing in line at the Avis counter tomorrow. So, I mean, if I'm booking cars for the next couple trips coming up, I think most definitely. Plus, you know, the app's easy because I already booked through the app all the time. I'm going to be overseas in 2 weeks. Boom. That's easy. That was 300 points just for booking international. So, I mean, why not? I mean, not that I'm not loyal, but hey, for this,
I think it's worth it. Points are points, and you know, freebies are freebies. I the changing of that Hertz United offer from a minimum of one night to a minimum of two definitely put a little sting in how generous that could be. You know, next up on our list is the Norwegian fare sale that's going on right now, and you know, gosh knows, there's always a ton of low fares to Europe right now, but this one's really, really broad. You have until September 5th to book, and I couldn't even believe how big the list of cities is that this covers.
Yeah, looking through the blog post, it's like almost every, I think it's pretty much every market that they fly out of the U.S. I mean, it'd be easier to say what cities they're not flying out of.
Yeah, I don't see Seattle, although they might have killed Seattle. But I see almost everything else.
Yeah, I mean, so I still haven't flown a Norwegian flight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just did American's Premium Economy 2 weeks ago and had mixed reviews. So now I'm really itching. I want to do a Premium Economy on Norwegian to do kind of like a true comparison. So there's a couple reasons why I might have to go to Europe coming up pretty soon. So I'm most definitely kicking the tires, and maybe I'll just bite the bullet and book a ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll like elements of the Norwegian product better than the American product, for sure. At least that's my opinion. But, you know, I'll be curious to hear what it is when you compare them. For folks who are thinking about this, these are $89 one-way fares in economy and about $250 round trip if you want to book the full loop. Running from, you have to book them by September 5th, but they run from October 31st through March of next year, end of March next year. So a big chunk of time to book these. And one of the things to think about, typically when you see these fare sales, you'll see a good fare on the way over, and then you'll see a worse fare on the way back. So as these fare sales start to get further, you know, towards the end date, you'll start to see some of the lowest fares disappear. Always remember with these, they're one-way fare sales. So if you have a stash of points, which I highly recommend, this is a great time to pull some of them out. If you find the $89 ticket on the way over, but it's a $300 one-way fare on the way back, maybe you cash in, you know, 30,000 United miles instead. So just something to think about. You know, that's probably not the best example, but you know, if you're looking at a really expensive return flight, think about other ways you can get back. It's a great, great philosophy to have a small stash of miles to pair up with these one-way cheap fares. You know, Mike mentioned the rumors about this, and I even snapped a picture of the big old W sitting on top of the SLS sign in Las Vegas. But you confirmed to me as good a confirmation as any that I've seen, because everything I saw was rumors, but you've got an actual email from the property saying, hey, by the way, we are no longer affiliated with Starwood at all.
Yeah, so it was just by pure happenstance, just pure coincidence. I was supposed to be in Vegas this past weekend for a couple different reasons. And I just was like, oh, I don't really want to go. I don't really want to go. I had a reservation at the SLS and was only doing so because I was going to try to leverage my SPG Marriott status to get a suite for one of my friend's, you know, birthday weekends. Because, you know, the last place I want to go in August is Vegas, right? and I got an email that basically said, we regret to inform you that effective, what was it, literally 2 days before I was checking in, this property will no longer be part of the SPG program, yada, yada, yada. And then I saw right after that a notification informing me that also the W would be closed. So that they're keeping the SLS name. It's just no longer associated within the newly merged SPG Marriott program. And the W, it wasn't even really ever its own hotel. You know, no, it was always kind of like a hotel in a hotel. But yeah, so now they're calling it the Grand Tower at the SLS. So yeah. Farewell W. I think it was only there for what, not even 2 years, maybe just over.
And it's sort of a bummer for Marriott SPG folks, because now what you get for properties on the Strip, I mean, there are a couple of Marriott-ish things around, but you know, SPG lost its partnership with Caesars, or not lost, but ended its partnership with Caesars. So you've got an SPG property that's off the Strip, you know, midway down the Strip, which is, you know, it's an okay property, but not great. You know, it leaves you thin for options. On the flip side, if you're a Hyatt person, or if you're thinking about you know, making the jump to Hyatt, they do have a double dip promotion going on right now, specifically for Las Vegas, where you can actually check into any of the casino properties that MGM has, as well as the Hyatt Place and Hyatt Houses in Vegas, and you can double dip and get both World of Hyatt base points and M Life Rewards tier credits. So you know, that's a nice plus for folks to be able to earn a little bit extra. I think it's a good way for people to be introduced to the M Life program and what the rewards are there. So for the next few months, if you do have a Vegas trip and you can't find a good Marriott or Starwood property to go to, make sure you double up in those MGM properties and score points on both.
Yeah, that's a major hit, because I've stayed at the SLS probably two out of my last four or five trips there. You know, the redemption was always pretty good. The rates were pretty good. I mean, it wasn't, it was like the worst kept secret on the strip that the hotel was struggling. So, it wasn't really surprising when the news came through.
No, I had to stay there just about 2 weeks ago, and I think my rate was $54 before the resort fee. I'm definitely sad to see it go. I won't be catching a whole lot of Starwood or Marriott elite night credits in that market very much anymore. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for swinging by. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk safaris and my wallet. And I hope you guys enjoyed both of those segments. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to tackle something new, something that's even been aspirational for me that I haven't gotten to yet. Definitely still on my bucket list. And let's just picture all of us in a classroom somewhere right now. I'm going to ask everybody to raise their hands if they want to go on an African safari. And in this imaginary classroom, I can see everybody's hands going up, because I would imagine this is on most people's bucket list. Now, how many of you are planning one of those trips? And I can see a whole bunch of hands coming down. I've got Stefan Krasowski on with me from Rapid Travel Chai. He's got a ton of experience traveling internationally. And what he woke me up to very quickly was that these trips don't have to break the bank. And that was what really dialed me in on wanting to do the segment is – you know, we want to provide these incredible experiences for our children. I want them to see a safari that's, you know, way beyond what they can catch at Disney World in Florida, even though that's a lot of fun. He's going to talk to us today about how to do that for amounts of money that you may be surprised to hear. Stefan, thanks for being on Miles to Go with me.
My pleasure.
So let's walk through the pieces here. First and foremost, if you have miles and points, it's best to think about trying to use that for the airfare to get you to Africa, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, where's a good starting jumping off point, do you think, to frame up one of these trips? Where are we trying to get to using our miles and points?
When you're looking family friendly and budget friendly, it's the far southern African country. So
okay.
South Africa has the most air service and options. Namibia is the one I'll pick as my top pick, and they have various services from Europe, as well as Qatar flies out of Doha on a relatively new service. Maybe more secondary airports, but connecting up to get to Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, or Livingstone, Zambia, makes a lot of like Chobe National Park in Botswana available, as well as other areas of Botswana that you could fly into. And those three countries all have tremendous family-friendly safari value.
Yeah, and for those collecting miles and points, the things that pop into my mind of ways to get there, I'll use, you know, Dulles at my headquarters, you know, here in D.C. You know, you've got British Airways, Lufthansa, South African Airways, and Qatar, which would all be ways to get you there fairly efficiently, that are all things that you could probably reasonably redeem miles on. You know, once we're there, walk folks through, as you walk me through, what you would see an ideal day, and, you know, what that might cost someone if they weren't necessarily trying to break the bank, but they weren't trying to find the cheapest path possible.
Absolutely. So you want to look for parks that ideally allow self-drive,
mm-hmm.
And they'll often have guided drives half day, full-day safaris that you can take to have that expert. But when they allow self-drive, like many of the parks in these countries, that constrains the cost quite a bit. You want to rent. It's in most of Africa, the standard is a Toyota Land Cruiser. Mm-hmm. That's the vehicle of choice. You'll see all over. Everybody knows how to repair it, and you'll rent one of these. So you're looking at, in most cases, somewhere around $50 to $100 a day for a vehicle.
Right.
Park permits, and one reason I didn't necessarily highlight, say, Kenya and Tanzania for this kind of family trip is the park permits in those countries tend to be much more expensive than say Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, where the park permits might be $20 or $30 a day for an adult.
And that's very reasonable.
Significantly more. So if you're able to self-drive, if you're able to have reasonable park permits, and then you're looking for ones that, for instance, Etosha National Park in Namibia. It's about a 4 to 5 hour drive north of Windhoek. It allows self-drive, and all the lodges in the park are government run.
Uh-huh.
So you can stay in the park, full comfort level, swimming pool outside, full bath, you know, restaurants, for around $200 to $250 a night, which by safari standards
is incredibly reasonable,
but also you can drive outside of the gates, and there's any number of family-run guest houses that are very comfortable. It's typically German families,
mm-hmm.
and these can be $30 to $50 a night for a double room. And the only difference being that you're outside the park, so you're commuting back in and out, which, you know, so it's a half an hour drive
sure.
back and forth, but a substantial savings. So you could spend several nights outside the park and maybe splash out for a night truly in the park and take advantage of a night safari.
So what does a day look like? Are you setting out? You'd mentioned that there are some water options as well, but what do you think a day looks like when you head out for your safari?
Generally, especially when you're talking about kids, but anybody that wilts under the sun, you're looking at getting up early and seeing things out in the morning before the midday heat,
right.
when animals may be out and active. You're driving around looking for watering holes. You find information at your lodge or from rangers where animals are likely to be active at that time. And then middle of the day, you're usually chilling out. Now, it's counterintuitive, but you want to be in most of these destinations in the driest, hottest time of year, because that's when all the scrub brush, the leaves, all of that is eaten way down.
Okay.
So almost drought conditions are perfect for spotting animals, because when it's the rainy
that
season, it's lush, you're not going to see. So when I went to Etosha, I didn't realize that at first. It was like everything is like, you know, dead. It's like, you know, the leaves off the trees thing, but that's the perfect time.
Right.
Because these animals, it is amazing how well they camouflage. So when you're in that kind of heat, the middle of the day, the animals are not out. You're going to want your kids resting cool.
Right.
And then back in the evening, there'll be evening drive you can take, or evening drives with your lodge and maybe even a night safari option.
And would you, in these sorts of situations, would you recommend having a guide with you?
In all the parks, there are rangers available on demand and mm-hmm. also lodge-run things. So rather than booking an entire package, you book ones that you want. So they'll have a morning drive, a two-hour morning game drive with a ranger, whatever that costs, $40 a person, let's say.
Right.
You take that one, and if you really like that experience compared to your self-drive, then you book an afternoon one. And it's really flexible in almost all cases to be able to do this and just pick up what you like, what you're feeling like. And I think about safari, not everybody takes to it that well, because the animals are spectacular, but it also involves, again, we're talking about very hot settings typically.
Sure.
And riding around in an SUV. If you're on a group tour like these lodge drives, it's usually an open vehicle
right.
that you're packed in a bit, and it can be quite bumpy. And so somebody can spend one day having a great safari and say, you know, I've seen what I want to see, and I'd rather chill out and read
right.
The next day or take a break. And others will just want to go out on every possible drive. And you can just, that way you can pick ones, you know, do I want to sign up for this one or not? And you're not constrained by so much budget. A favorite one of mine, if you visit Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe and Zambia, which is one of the world's great waterfalls, of
Absolutely.
Course, they offer a day tour to Chobe National Park in Botswana. You spend about an hour and a half driving by bus over the border, and you spend half a day on a boat seeing more hippos and elephants than you'll ever imagine. You have lunch in a nice lodge. In the afternoon, you're on the SUV seeing giraffes. You might see some lions, and you're back in your hotel by 5 or 6 p.m., and you've spent maybe $120 to $150 a person for the entire thing, all the permits, the whole process. And after that day, you'll know exactly what more safaris you want to do anywhere. And are you going to go out the next day for something, another park, another experience? Or is it, you know, that I saw that, and that's spectacular, and we move on.
Yeah, and I think what was great about the example when you brought up to me is that we really are talking about for my family of four, we're talking about measuring this experience in the hundreds of dollars for a day experience as opposed to thousands. Mm-hmm. And certainly we've got the cost to get over there, no question. But you know, as you lay it out, we can find a reasonable hotel, something that we're comfortable with. And as you say, there are more affordable options. But I can take my family of four. I can stay in a nice lodge where I'll have some creature comforts that the kids will be probably more approachable with. I can have a great experience on potentially a boat and then with an SUV exploring the animals. And by the time I get back to my hotel that night with my lodging that night, I probably haven't spent $1,000.
Yeah, very much so. And I know you're a Marriott SPG kind of guy. The Protea hotel chain they have has all range of from basic to very luxurious. Their most luxurious hotels are called African Pride level, but they have all the way down to quite basic. And their award rates, and as well with the currency being down, their cash rates are very attractive. They have a park in Kruger, and even on a short layover. So if you're connecting in Johannesburg, like I was earlier this year, the just about, I'm thinking it was about 2 hours drive to the northwest, and it's just outside Sun City, which is their sort of Las Vegas of South Africa with a giant casino complex, water park. There was so much retail and water park that I had to ask actually where the casino is. So it's family friendly in that sense. And in the park right next door, I stayed at one of the park lodges in the park things. It was $90 a night for a private room, dinner that was a steak dinner, and the breakfast, and it was self-drive safari, and the park permit was $20-something.
Wow.
And that, because I had a 24-hour layover in Johannesburg and was able to do that. And I have to confess, I stopped at the water park on the way back, and I...
to cool off.
I can't resist water slides, so... Yeah. And there were some intense water slides. You need teenagers. This is not little kid stuff, but there are little kid things at Sun City. So, and that's incredibly affordable as well.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And I didn't come into this segment thinking that these things were this affordable. And I've taken a new light out of this. I hope that the listeners as well, take away the fact that if you're saving miles and points and you can find a way to get to Africa, that safaris don't have to cost you $10,000, $15,000, that you can do it for a very approachable amount of money. And, having known Stefan for a number of years, I am absolutely sure that he would be happy to answer questions. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not on the podcast if they do have questions about how to put together their first safari.
I'll add in one totally different, unexpected one.
Yeah.
You said if they're getting to Africa. So if they're getting to Asia, there's a lot of safaris that people don't realize. You're in Kuala Lumpur or somewhere. You can fly to Medan, Indonesia on Air Asia for like $20, an hour flight.
Mm.
And an hour or so from the airport, you can be seeing the orangutans.
Oh, wow.
Very cheaply. So it's not just Africa that you can have these encounters. And the mountain gorillas and the orangutans are both some of the most incredible experiences I've had in terms of wildlife encounters. So it's there can be safaris in quite a few places, and Miles and Points travelers have a way to do all the miles and then figure out something cool on the ground. But my blog is Rapid Travel Chai. The Twitter, Facebook, Instagram are all that same account, Rapid Travel CHAI. A Facebook group is called Every Passport Stamp that discusses a lot of these destinations. And I look forward to hearing about all the incredible family safaris you've taken.
Oh, I can't wait. And every passport stamp on Facebook is a great place for you folks to start if you're looking to find a way to explore some of these faraway places. Stefan, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Can't wait to have you back on again.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
Hey, while we're taking a quick break, I wanted to share with you another of my favorite travel podcasts. Back in episode 24, we did a deep dive into the awesome new Norwegian Bliss cruise ship. I mean, go-kart track on the rooftop deck of a cruise ship? Awesome. Kimberly from the Stuff Suitcase was our guest that day. She's also the co-host of the Vacation Mavens podcast. Kimberly and her co-host Tamara discuss tons of awesome destinations for family travel. They're just getting back from their summer travel hiatus, so now's a great time to start listening. You can find them at vacationmavens.com or on Apple Podcasts or wherever good podcasts are found.
Hey, welcome back. I've got Tiffany Funk from 1 Mile at a Time. And, you know, this is sort of a... Gosh, what's the best way to describe this? Well, so Tiffany and I were recording a segment for my other podcast, the Now Boarding podcast, which was, you know, really more specifically about Tiffany. And I admitted to her in a moment of weakness that I don't have a card that earns American Express membership rewards in my wallet. And I had mentioned to her that I had recorded a segment for you guys a few weeks ago about how I read a post on 1 Mile at a Time that Ben wrote about how he went through all the cards that he carries and sort of walked through how he justifies paying the annual fee. Because in the end, why keep a card in your wallet that you're paying an annual fee for, especially with a lot of cards today that are higher annual fees, right?
Right,
Tiff?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it was, hey, like, here's how he gets all his value. And I read that post and I shared it with some folks and I shared it with you guys, and I talked about all the things that you need to do, and then I didn't bother to do any of that myself. And so I'm sitting here, you know, I'm not just getting beaten up by Tiffany about the American Express membership rewards decision, but I carry, as Tiff is looking at the cards in my wallet on the table, the main ones that I carry about 10. Two of those are SPG Amex cards.
Which I love that Ed has already put red dots on his SPG Amex cards, which I assume mean do not use.
Well, okay, so this one is personal. It do not use for personal expenses. What I used to do the red dots for, and for anybody who has husbands and wives out there who are not into the hobby, I will tell you, dots on cards with letters that tell them what to do with them is how I got my wife from one card to two cards to three cards. It was like, here's a G for gas, use this one. Like, so I helped use the dots to help her categorize. That was the original gist of the system.
Okay.
So it's a leftover dot. But I'm absolutely going to retire the Starwood cards because they're not good. The Starwood American Express cards because they're not good values. And setting aside the mess that is the sign-up bonuses now, which you can hear Richard Kerr and I talked about a couple weeks ago. Tiffany is like sort of like getting ready to like crack her knuckles and beat
me
up.
I'm actually so excited looking at this list. Okay, so we have an SPG, Amex, personal, and business, and the earnings rates on these are now terrible. So you're going to cancel those.
Yep, okay.
The great thing is that when you get rid of, or you can keep them if you want to keep them for the free night, because the $95 annual fee is well worth it for the free night.
Yeah, I probably get enough value out of that.
Yeah, and you can certainly use
those. I just won't spend on them ever again.
Right, you're not going to spend on them forever again. Okay, so that's fine. So looking at this, there's a couple cards that Ed has that are unconventional that I love. I don't know anything about Target, but he has a Target red card. That's great.
So yeah, the only reason is if you have kids who frequently want to shop at Target, it's, you know, you get 5% off of everything you buy at Target with a red card.
Yeah,
so
it seems great.
So it's literally like it's a debit thing. It comes off it comes out of the bank account at the end of the month. It's great. 5% is hard to get anywhere else.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. So I feel similarly to Ed. Also has the Citi Costco card, which is great because you're not really paying an annual fee for it because you're already paying your Costco membership.
Yeah.
You're getting like 4% back on 4% back on gas and other perks. And I know that you spend a ton at Costco.
Like, oh,
Costco
gosh.
Doesn't have it, you don't need it, other than apparently the things from Target.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then I love, this is rare to see in the miles and points space, I love that you have a cash back card.
I do.
So Ed has the Citi Double Cash, which I love. You get 1% when you spend, 1% when you pay. And I think the cash back cards are underrated.
Yeah.
But it's nice. You know, it's money back in your wallet. And for things that, you know, otherwise if you're not meeting minimum spend or you're not otherwise maximizing a bonus category, it can be a really good option.
Yeah. And I think two places that cashback cards come into play that most of the folks in the travel blogging community don't talk about is when you have a lot of points or a very small amount of points. Because if you have a lot of points, I have a lot of, say, Ultimate Rewards points.
Mm-hmm.
If I have on bonus spend, I don't really need to earn more there.
Right.
And so 2% cash back is sort of like my placeholder. It's like, all right, well, that's a good unbonus spend amount. I'm cool with that. And then if I don't have a lot of points, I'm not going to be able to redeem anytime soon, and I'm not going to be doing aspirational travel. Well, 2% is a pretty safe bet for getting good value.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great option. And then you also have a couple of different ink cards because for people who don't know, like you
I have more than these three, but these are the three primary ones for three of the businesses.
Yeah. Ed has multiple businesses. And for any other small business owners or people who deal with multiple businesses, it really is helpful to have different cards for each business just so that your accountant doesn't hate you. Right?
Yeah.
And just to help keep things organized and stuff like that.
And Chase is one of the few. So, like, you know, American Express kind of sort of does this as well, but more clunkily, and Citi just doesn't do it. Chase, for the business cards, will give you cards with different numbers. And that doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you have a Citibank card, like use the Citi America Airlines card, and we've all got the same number,
right.
Having the account set aside charges is tough.
Yeah.
And so this helps. I can give everybody in the business a card and separate things, but I can also earn what I consider to be, at least for me, living in D.C. and relying on United a lot, having the flexible currency that pushes easily into not only a number of hotel chains, but pushes easily into United is a good base value for me. It's hard for me to go too far off base.
Yeah. So that's great. My only question with these are all older versions of the ink cards.
They are.
So do you feel like they still work well for people who don't know, the older ink cards, the Plus and the Bold, and then also the ink cash, they offer things like the 5x on office supply store,
yeah.
Which I know is a huge category for you.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people. But there's also like the preferred now, the ink mm-hmm. business preferred, which is giving bonus points on like the shipping and the advertising and the marketing. You know, so for some people that could make sense.
I think it does. Yeah, and I think it does for a lot of businesses. The cards that these businesses get used for are much more brick and mortar, so dry cleaning, restaurant, stuff like that, and they don't use a ton in that category.
Okay.
So like for example, in the restaurant space and franchising, like they take care of most of the marketing stuff, so we don't do SEO and stuff like that. I think if we did move into those forays, I would definitely change these out. For now, yes, the 5x on office supplies gets hammered with Amazon gift cards by me all year long, and when I hit the max for $50,000 on a card, I like patiently or impatiently wait for it to reset so I can keep buying lots and lots of gift cards.
Okay, cool. So going through this, like, Ed, are we missing any cards?
Oh, there's other cards I have, but these are the cards I spend on.
Okay. So here's my concern looking at all these. And there's a Hilton card and a Hyatt card, and those are great because I understand, like, the Hilton makes sense for the points, the Hyatt makes sense for the pathway to elite status. But, like, I know that you basically live in airports.
Yeah.
Which suggests to me that you spend a significant quantity of money on airfare.
I do.
Okay. I don't see anything here that's earning bonus points on airfare.
No, and what you're gonna help me get there either by twisting my arm behind my back or telling me to make good decisions. But the reason the transition period I'm in was I used to carry an American Airlines the $450 card with the executive card,
right, which is still a great card if you really value the Admirals Club access.
Correct. And so what I found myself was there were two things I valued that card for: Admirals Club access and the EQMs.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to go for Executive Platinum again this year.
Congratulations! Welcome to the club.
Yep. And so at that point it was how many times am I going to visit an Admirals Club, and as a business expense, is it worth it to spend $450 a year if I'm not going to go, you know, 15 times? And so I started going through the math of it and just decided I probably wasn't going to get there, and that was why I retired that card. At the same time, I had a United card that I would spend enough to get the 5,000 PQMs when I was trying to get both Executive Platinum and 1K. It's become a little less important. And as I transition, I am going to hammer the World of Hyatt card this year and spend to get enough nights to top off 60 for the year. Even though I do have lifetime status, I want the extra upgrades and the extra free nights and all that. But I will get to a point next year where I know I'm not going to go for ambassador status on Marriott Starwood next year because I don't spend $20,000 a year on hotels. And yes, there probably is a gap now where I need something to put my airfare on since I don't use that American Airlines card or I might use the United card, but suffice to say that I'm going to give up a big chunk of spend and need to put it somewhere. And airfare is something you brought up to me when you gave me that big bug eye look like I can't believe. Like, just like Summer, when she looked at me, she's like, "You've never been to Hawaii?" Was sort of like, you know, I think Tiff wanted to kind of jump across the table at me and like force my fingers to the keyboard to make me sign up for an Amex Platinum card.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't like want to force you to sign up for an Amex Platinum card, but like, let's just talk about it. 5x points on airfare.
Sure.
Like, and I don't know how much you're spending on airfare because you're pretty, like, you're a good shopper, you're pretty frugal, but I also know, like, the reality of, like, you're spending a lot.
Yeah.
And right now you're getting 0x points.
Yeah.
on airfare. Or 1x points.
2x points with the World of Hyatt.
Okay, but, like,
that's not great.
There's a difference between a Hyatt point, like, you know, the value of a Hyatt point versus something else.
Yep.
So you're talking instant 5x points, you're racking up a bajillion points on that, okay? And we're not even talking about, like, the welcome bonus or anything else like that. Are you taking Uber?
I do some Uber. I tend to rent cars more because I have to go a lot of place-to-place stuff.
Okay.
But probably more renting cars than Uber.
Okay. So still, you're okay. So we're talking, like, justifying the Amex Platinum. Yes, it's 5x points on travel, and Ed would earn a ton of points. but there is that $550 annual fee.
Sure.
So there's a $200 annual Uber credit. Maybe you're not really going to get that at face value. I'm in the same situation. I don't take Uber once a month. So the $15 Uber credit every month doesn't always work out for me.
Oh, that's right, because it's once a month, right? Yes. Yeah. Like if it was $200 for the year, I would absolutely max it. I would say if it's $15 a month, which you're right, I remember that, I probably get that 6 or 7 months of the year.
Yeah. And I guess you could always use it from like home to the airport or something like that. Like that's where I'll occasionally use it.
Yeah.
So maybe that. Okay. $200 annual airline fee credit for your airline of choice. Yeah,
that's a shoe-in.
Well, yes and no, right? Like, I mean, for some people, they'll do the gift card thing, but others are like, well, I don't pay to check bags because I'm an elite, so I'm not getting that benefit. I'm not paying for upgrades or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't have the check bag thing, but there's enough fees. And by the way, for folks who are, you know, more entry-level, what TIFF means by the gift card thing is that you can, in certain instances, buy a gift card from the airlines on your American Express Platinum card, and that will qualify as a quote-unquote fee, and you get the $200 rebate, so essentially giving you a free $200 gift card.
And who are you flying now? Are you like not flying American? Are you a free agent?
I'm a free agent. Most of my travel, when I say most, not majority, most of my travel ends up on United because they get me home quickest to the wife and kids.
Okay.
There's probably 10 instances of Southwest a year, 10 to 15 Americans a year, and then what I would call a basket of others, Frontier, Spirit, you know, just things that fit for different segments.
Okay. So the nice thing, again, like you're talking, I know you don't have this with your other cards. This is crazy. So at the bare minimum, you're getting a priority pass with the Amex Platinum.
I have priority pass with something around here.
Well, it did not make it out onto this list of things.
Okay. I feel like I have priority pass.
I feel like, I mean, everybody has like 7 priority pass cards, like, but like, active and current with given your current credit card portfolio?
Yeah. I have a Sapphire Reserve. I have a, what is it that's giving me priority pass? Because I know I have it.
Well, if you have a Sapphire Reserve, that's why you're getting it. But the Sapphire Reserve is not here on the table.
Yeah. No, I'm not spending on it.
Okay.
No, Sapphire Preferred. My bad. I don't have a Sapphire Reserve.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know that could be helpful. You're getting lounge access in some of those airports where you need it. You're not tied to a certain airline. You know, with the Amex Platinum, the only restriction on lounge access is if you want access to the Delta Sky Clubs, you have to be flying Delta.
Sure.
Which, and I do, if you were flying Delta, you would then want access to the Sky Club, so that could be a good option.
And I do a handful of Deltas a year, too.
Okay. And then it's crazy to me that you're not earning membership rewards.
And the funny thing is the first credit card I ever had was an American Express green card. And for years, all I ever earned were membership rewards. And I made a radical shift, which I've been known to do. My wife is rolling her eyes right now. She's listening. Yes, I understand. My husband makes radical shifts. And I made a radical shift to American Airlines cards and then figured out that the Starwood card earned more American Airlines points than the actual American Airlines credit cards back in like the late 90s. And I never went back to membership rewards. I've been, as you can see by the dates on the SPG cards, member since 94. So I've been an SPG member for a long time.
Right.
I just never went back to membership rewards after
that. Well, and I think
divorce.
It's sort of time, because if you think about the SPG cards, used to be a great flexible points currency, but you're not really earning points at the same rate there. So your only flexible points currency is Ultimate Rewards.
Right.
Which is great. They have great transfer partners. I love Ultimate Rewards as well, but you're missing out on a lot of opportunities because you don't have membership rewards.
Yeah.
So things like, I know your kids are getting a little bit older to where maybe now we're going to be talking like a trip to Europe could happen.
We do Europe trips every year. Tons of it, yeah. So, Australia is probably the next one up.
It'd be – okay, Australia is also a fabulous option. But like just talking about Europe, especially from the East Coast, like wouldn't you rather spend like 110,000 points for round-trip business class tickets rather than 140,000 and still have access to the same Star Alliance carriers? Or 88,000 ANA points if you're crazy.
Yeah, but the other thing to think about, like most of my ultimate reward spend is coming in the 5X categories. I'm hammering the office supply categories to earn at that level. So I would put travel expenses on the Amex Platinum, but I probably wouldn't put anything. I don't think I'd put anything else on it. I'd have to revise.
Well, you could. I mean, you could also look at like the Blue Business Plus, which is just going to get 2X points on the first $50,000 you spend each year.
Sure.
Which and no annual fee. Mm-hmm. So for some of these other businesses, maybe that's something that makes sense. Like, oh, it's not going to cost me anything to set you up with a business card or just do something like that. And, you know, the other thing that I really like, and I know that your wife takes a similar approach to miles and points as my husband does, which is like, I'll do what I have to do.
Right. I like she likes traveling in the front of the plane. She just doesn't want to know a lot of details about how
to
do it.
So he, nowadays, there's only 2 cards in his wallet.
Okay.
Because that's what was necessary for marriage. The Amex Everyday. It just was because, you know.
That's my wife. I've gotten her to 3. There are a couple
times.
Yeah,
so like he was at a restaurant and he pulled out the card, actually, I feel like that your wife should have. And he pulled it out and he's like, an Amex Everyday Preferred. I'm like, this is not, why are you using this at a restaurant? He's like, it says Everyday and Preferred on it. Like, how can it not be the right card?
There's marketing at its finest.
Yeah, but it's a good point. Like, I just feel like there's so much of a benefit to just giving your spouse a card that, like, just use this for everything. I don't care. It's fine. Yeah. Like, it earns a good enough return, and I can pool it with these other points that I'm mm-hmm. earning that are really valuable and open up, like, all of these different opportunities for mileage currencies that I don't have access to otherwise anymore.
Yeah. No, and she,
and it's easy.
And I've got to pull a card out of her wallet, too, because the SPG Amex has had a place in her wallet for a long time, because from an unbonus spend standpoint,
exactly.
it was my
go-to.
And for
my husband, too, it was, like, the default. He's like, yeah. oh, I'll just use this. I'll yeah. use this. And so it's like, well, yeah. you know. So we've swapped the SPG for a Freedom Unlimited in his wallet.
Yeah, and I might do that. Although, as you mentioned, I might also do, Amex Platinum. And the reason why I might put some unbonus spend there on my wife in terms of, like, how many cards she might carry is just like, all right, well, you know, I don't know that I have enough spending in travel alone to get 4 award seats for the family on a regular enough basis.
Right. So then you'd add in, like, that Blue Business Plus. You'd right. add in that Everyday Preferred. And yeah. the nice thing about Amex, you don't have to do any of this, you know, combining point shenanigans. They just automatically all pool right. into one account, which right. is really nice.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Amex Platinum. You can add authorized users, right?
Yep.
It's one fee for 3 authorized users. So
yep.
you can add your wife if she's ever traveling without you or,
right.
you know, the parents or in-laws or business partners or things like that. Like, that might
yeah.
be a better option.
Well, there you have it, folks. And I will say that was about the nicest I've ever been taken behind a woodshed.
Hey, okay. Ed, this is for your own good.
See, there it is, folks. There, we're just dipping right in. I'm doing this for you, Ed. It's just for you.
It doesn't benefit me. This is for you.
Well, when you're not hopping on the podcast with me, tell folks where they can find you.
You can find me at onemileatatime.com. There, I read all the comments along with Ben. Bless his heart for doing that.
All the comments.
And then we also have the Ask Lucky forums, which is great. If you also need a credit card intervention, we can all help each other out, because I know that sometimes we are in this space the worst at taking our own advice, although we're constantly advising our friends and family as to what to do.
Yep.
So I think it's good to bounce these things off of each other every once in a while, or on Twitter at TEBFunk.
Yeah, and like I've said before, she's a great follow on Twitter. She's always great with a pithy and sometimes sarcastic comment. I love it. All right, well, thanks for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
We'll be right back, guys.
Welcome back as we wrap up this week's show with the final 2 pennies. Hope you enjoyed the show, starting off with producer Mike and I going through news and notes about some new deals that you may want to think about and the sad demise of the W and the SLS in Las Vegas being part of the SPG program. We follow that up with Stefan Krasowski and a great way to do African safaris on a small budget, as well as talking to Tiffany Funk and how she thinks my wallet needs just a little bit of reorganization. So, the final 2 pennies this week. Let's take a deep breath. The Marriott program has merged with Starwood, or taken over Starwood, if you will, and everything's one big, somewhat unhappy family. It's been over a week, and I still can't log into my account, and I've heard that from any number of folks. I've heard of folks who can't make simple award reservations. I've heard of folks that lost track of their award nights, that lost their balances. You know, mergers like this don't have to be difficult. The transitioning of these systems doesn't have to be this way, but it seems like in the world of miles and points, it almost always is. The best thing I can advise for right now is just be patient. It might not seem like that's the best course of action, but in reality, it's really the only course of action. There's only so much you're going to get Marriott to do right now. The call centers, I'm sure, are inundated. They've got plenty of folks whose accounts are broken. So unless it's something that's really super mission critical, just take a deep breath and wait as long as you can. And hopefully that'll be enough. If you've got something that's urgent, sure, you're going to have to take a chance and jump in. I've found reasonable success calling Starwood and getting a couple of reservations made, but it appears I still have 4 loyalty numbers, one of which I'm sure will become an authoritative one at some point. In the meantime, I would say if you're thinking about combining your Marriott and your SPG accounts and you haven't done so yet, I would wait. I think that the tech stuff will get better here shortly, but I wouldn't be trying to do anything too tech heavy with Marriott at the moment. So summing it up in that final 2 pennies, be patient. If you don't need to touch your Marriott or your SPG account right now, don't. If you're thinking about combining the accounts, I wouldn't do that either. Try calling if you can. If you're an SPG and a Marriott member, the little bit of feedback I've heard so far is the SPG agents seem to be a bit better at navigating through the issues, and you may find shorter hold times there. I do hope that this thing gets better soon because, you know, I know everybody wants to make sure they can use their points for all the great opportunities that the new program has at the top level. If you haven't heard, the Marriott travel packages did get a bit of a reframe. You can find a post on my blog about that. So if you did book a Marriott travel package before the merger and you were unhappy with the categorization that they released after, there is an opportunity to downgrade and or get a refund of some of your points. So all important stuff that we need to focus in on. Be patient. I'm sure it'll be better soon. I know it's rough for everybody out there. I'm right there with you not being able to access my accounts. Hope you enjoyed listening this week. I had a ton of fun recording. If you're enjoying the show, as always, two best things you can do are subscribe to the podcast in whatever platform you're listening to and give us a rating. Those two things help expand the reach of the show, which is definitely something that we want to do each and every week. We'll bring you more great travel tips and tricks next week, but until then, we've got miles to go.